Luke chapter 5, verses 27 through 39. After this, he went out and saw a tax collector named Levi sitting at the tax booth, and he said to him, "Follow me." And leaving everything, he rose and followed him. And Levi made him a great feast in his house, and there was a large company of tax collectors and others reclining at table with them. And the Pharisees and their scribes grumbled at his disciples, saying, "Why do you eat and drink with tax collectors and sinners?" And Jesus answered them, "Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance." And they said to him, "The disciples of John fast often and offer prayers, and so do the disciples of the Pharisees, but yours eat and drink." And Jesus said to them, "Can you make wedding guests fast while the bridegroom is with them? The days will come when the bridegroom is taken away from them, and then they will fast in those days." He also told them a parable. "No one tears a piece from a new garment and puts it on an old garment. If he does, he will tear the new, and the piece from the new will not match the old. And no one puts new wine into old wineskins. If he does, the new wine will burst the skins, and it will be spilled, and the skins will be destroyed. But new wine must be put into fresh wineskins. And no one, after drinking old wine, desires new, for he says, 'The old is good.'" This is the word of the Lord. Please be seated.
Most often when I step into the pulpit, I have one goal, which is to examine and apply the biblical passage that we just read. But today, because it is the start of the Lenten season and because it is the start of a new sermon series, if you'll bear with me, I have three goals today. I want to introduce the season of Lent. I want to consider Lent's impact on our annual focus. And then we will examine and apply Luke 5, 27 to 39, which Hunter just read. Before I get into this, I have three people I need to thank that have impacted this sermon in ways I'm probably aware of and ways that I'm probably not aware of on some level. Just a lot of influence from outside went into this sermon series. Lori Lee, who volunteers with Open Door Bible Study, Luke Kincaid, our student ministry pastor, and John Rittner, one of our former associate pastors who's now a lead pastor out in Hollywood. Thanks to all of them. I'll try to note their contributions, but I'm sure they have impacted this in ways I'm not even currently aware of. So first, let's dive in to introduce the season of Lent. As you heard earlier, Hunter said we are an interdenominational family of faith. So quick poll, how many of you grew up in a church that observed the season of Lent? Raise your hands. All right, continuing on with the poll, hands down. How many of you did not grow up in a church that did not observe the season of Lent? My hand is up on this one. Similar to the first service, it's about 50-50, maybe 55-45 on the not observe Lent side. So let's take a moment and make sure that because we have a significant portion of our congregation that grew up not observing Lent, and some of the aspects of Lent might be unfamiliar, let's take a moment and orient ourselves to the season of Lent. I want to read a quote from a book called 40 Days of Decrease, which if you went to the Open Door Women's Bible Study this week, you began studying it. And I got this from Lori Lee. She said this, the author of the book begins day two of the Lenten journey with a quote from Eugene Peterson, who wrote the Bible translation, The Message. He writes this, "Christian spirituality, the contemplative life, is not about us. It is about God. The great weakness of American spirituality is that it is all about us, fulfilling our potential, getting the blessings of God, expanding our influence, finding our gifts, getting a handle on principles by which we can get an edge over the competition. The more there is of us, the less there is of God." And the author, Alicia Britt Kole, someone corrected my pronunciation in the first service. Not sure I got it right in the second service, but we'll go with that. Alicia Britt Kole, she commented on Eugene's quote with these words. Though uttered with reference to his and my culture, Eugene Peterson's insight has global relevance, for it reveals the church's spiritualization of an insatiable narcissism. Self cannot satisfy self, no matter how frequently it feasts. Lent is a much-needed mentor in an age obsessed with visible, measurable, manageable, and tweetable increase. For it invites us to walk with Jesus and his disciples through darker seasons that we would rather avoid: grief, conflict, misunderstanding, betrayal, restriction, rejection, and pain. Then Easter leads us in celebration of salvation as the stunningly satisfying fruit of Jesus' sacred decrease. That's worth pondering for a moment. A thoughtful Lenten journey directly confronts our modern obsession with increase and introduces us to unexpected friends of spiritual formation. Our modern obsession of increase contrasted with Jesus' stunningly satisfying fruit of decrease. And if you don't think our modern obsession of increase is all around you, you are not at Lori Lee's talk for Open Door Bible Study this Wednesday. She showed some pictures. First, Straight Talk Wireless. There's a commercial. I've seen it on TV, and they say it's time for some straight talk. You want the truth? Here's some straight talk. Some people out there are saying less is more. Who would say that? And the voice in the commercial, I've watched this 10 times now, I love it. The voice in the commercial goes, less is more? That's ridiculous. And then he says, more is more, of course. Less is more? That's ridiculous. More is more. Lori got an email from Joanne Fabrics. Joanne said, Lori, you have a new mission. You go, whoa, Joanne? For me, a new mission? Thanks, Joanne. What's my mission? Your next mission is about more. If you're wondering how I know this from the women's Bible study on Wednesday morning, Lori is in my small group. That's how I know all this. So we've been talking about her talk at our small group a lot. And once Lori started saying all of this cultural suggestion of more this, more that, I started seeing it everywhere. Yesterday, I was at the University of Virginia versus Louisville basketball game with my kids. I one time had a congregant ask me a question. He said, are you aware that there are other colleges in Virginia? I said, yes, and occasionally I'll attend their sporting events. So I'm at the University of Virginia watching this basketball game, and there was an advertisement that came on the big board for the UVA health system, and the advertisement talked about how they were doing more, how they were seeking more, how they were asking more questions, and if you would be a part of UVA, you could be a part of this more, and it ended with this: unafraid to ask more. And it made me think, well, what if I'm not asking more? What if I am looking for less? Am I afraid? Unafraid to ask more. Our culture is obsessed with increase, contrasted with the picture of Jesus moving to Calvary, a picture of sacred decrease. So here's my definition of Lent for this year. Lent is a season of less in a culture of more. Lent is a season of less in a culture of more. And so now I want to move on to my second goal. If we're all oriented together on what Lent is, what would Lent's impact on our annual focus be? We have an annual focus each year for our teaching. This year it's entitled Called to Explore, taken from Jesus' words in Acts 1:8, where he looks at his disciples and says, you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem, and in all Judea and Samaria, and even to the end of the earth. I believe our culture of more impacts how we hear Jesus' call to explore. When we hear Jesus say, you will be my witnesses, I think many of us, including myself, hear a call to addition. Okay, I gotta do more. You will be my witnesses. I'm gonna have to go to another Bible study. I'm gonna have to join another small group. Maybe I need to start showing up at this church event and do that, and then I'm gonna have to talk to this person. And gosh, if I've got a call to explore, there's a lot more I need to add to my to-do list. And I've heard people struggle with this as we talk about how we might be witnesses as a church body in Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and to the end of the earth. Some people feel overwhelmed by the weight of more that that could add, the increased addition to our discipleship lives that we can hear that call as. But here's what's interesting as you look at how Jesus lived out his call to explore. Jesus, who was a witness to the end of the earth, you never see Jesus rushing in the Gospels. You never see him rushing. I've put together a little slide. I'll call it the pace of Jesus. What did Jesus's pace look like in the Gospels? And in Mark 5:24, there's this huge crowd all around him, and there's one man that says, "My daughter is sick." And Mark tells us that Jesus went with him. He doesn't say, "I'm sorry, you're just one person, and I've got this crowd. If I stay here, I can witness to more people. I can do more ministry." No, he went with him. In Mark 8:28, Jesus meets a blind man. And before Jesus heals the blind man, it says that he led him out of the village by the hand. He doesn't say, "Hey, blind man, we're going to have to get this done real quick. Boom, you're healed, because I got to get on to heal someone else. No, he takes time to grab him by the hand and lead him out of the village. Very personal experience with the man. In Luke 5:16, we read that Jesus would withdraw to desolate places. Elsewhere, we read that he did this often. And probably the most stunning picture of the pace of Jesus in the Gospels is in John 11:66, when he learns that his friend Lazarus is sick and dying. John records that he stayed where he was 2 days longer. You see, Jesus does not obsess over adding more to the docket of his ministry. Rather, he aligns every aspect of his life with God's mission for his life. Occasionally, people will hear me speak a little Spanish. I'll find myself in a situation where some Spanish is helpful. People will hear me speak Spanish. "Where did you learn to speak Spanish?" And don't worry, my Spanish is not that advanced. I don't have a very good accent. People that don't speak Spanish like my Spanish because it sounds like "Hola, ¿cómo estás?" It's very easy to understand. And I say, "Well, I actually spent some time in Nicaragua for an extended season." I remember one day realizing, as I was on a trip to Nicaragua that lasted a couple months, I started counting up the different weeks and 2 weeks and month-long periods I'd spent in Nicaragua, and I realized that I had spent a full year of my life in Nicaragua. And I started thinking, "Wow, that's great. I've heard the call to explore. I've been to the ends of the earth for a whole year. But what about the other 37 years? You can go out into the foyer and hang a left, and you can see our missions corner, and our mission trips for this year are listed. And I hope everyone would look at that and consider taking a trip to the end of the earth somewhere to be Jesus's witness. But you have to ask yourself, what about the other 51 weeks of the year?" And so this week I found myself upstairs with a broken toilet, and I was scrubbing the floor and I was toweling things up, and it was not fun and not pleasant. And I thought, "I wish I was in Nicaragua right now." See, Jesus doesn't just say, "I'm going to add more things to his ministry life." He says, "I'm going to align every moment with God's mission." I started thinking, how could I align cleaning a bathroom floor with the mission of God? How could that be done? If that could be done, where would I find the information, the principles to do it? So this is my prayer for us this Lenten season. At this Lenten season, may we hear Jesus' call to explore as a call to alignment before addition. A call to alignment before addition. Surely there will be things we need to add to our lives if we're really going to embrace Jesus' call to explore. But maybe for this 6 weeks together, these 40 days, we could think about how we're aligning everyday, ordinary moments with God's mission. And I'm indebted to John Rittner, our former associate pastor, for that phrase, addition versus alignment, and thinking alignment before addition. It's something he's talked about and has really impacted my own discipleship journey. So over the next 6 weeks, we will look at scenes of Jesus's table fellowship in the Gospel of Luke. And we'll witness how Jesus took the most ordinary moments, like the sharing of a meal, happens three times a day. And he took those ordinary moments and he aligned them with God's mission. Well-known preacher and former professor of preaching, Fred Craddock, said this: in cultures and subcultures of that time and place, table customs were identifying marks of a group, whether philosophical, literary, or religious. As expressed in a Near Eastern proverb, I saw them eating, and I knew who they were. Who was Jesus as he ate with people? May we hear Jesus' call to explore as a call to alignment before addition. It's not about more, but the manner in which we do things. So let's move to Luke chapter 5 now. And I want to look at something we'll call the table manners of Jesus. The table manners of Jesus. And this is what they're looking at over in student ministries as well. The table manners of Jesus. And I want to invite you, I'm going to be in this passage for the rest of our time together. It's Luke chapter 5. Verse 27, it's on page 861. Pull that red Bible out. You can follow along. You can see what did Jesus look like when he was at table with people. Page 861, Luke 5, 27. I'll just read the first two verses here. After this, he went out and saw a tax collector named Levi sitting at the tax booth. And he said to him, "Follow me." And leaving everything, he rose and followed him. And Levi made him a great feast at his house. And there was a large company of tax collectors and others reclining at table with them. What I think is interesting here in this story is the contrast between Levi following Jesus and then Jesus showing up at Levi's house. Wait, I thought Levi went and left everything behind, including his sinful life of being a tax collector beholden to a foreign occupying government. I thought he left that. Now he's following Jesus. But it looks like Jesus is now at his house. And this is interesting because rabbis would often call people that may not have had the best reputation as a sign of their willingness to work with people and maybe take someone from where they are and move them to where they should be. So while it was surprising that Jesus called a tax collector, it wasn't unheard of. What would have been unheard of was that Jesus would have then had this tax collector following him and that Jesus, the rabbi, would actually follow the tax collector back to his house. That would have been unheard of, radical. No. You can follow me as long as you're following me. I am not going back into that den of sinners where you live with all of your tax collector friends. That's what most rabbis would have said, but not Jesus. Jesus, you find him right after Levi follows him, back at Levi's house with a large company of tax collectors and others, and he's reclining at the table with them. You see, Jesus' first table manner is availability. He makes himself available to Levi. He doesn't just say, "Levi, you are now available to me." He says, "Levi, as you're available to me, I'm going to make myself available to you and all of your friends and all of the problems and all of the sins that come with your friends." Jesus' first table manner is availability. There was a pastoral intern at the chapel several years ago, and I had a relationship with him before he was a pastoral intern. I walked with him through some difficult things while he was a high school student, so there was a depth to our relationship, not just someone I had met for the year of the internship. And we got to the end of his internship year, toward the end, and I said, "Is there anything you want to say to me?" I want the mentorship to go both ways at this point in our lives. You've graduated from college. You've seen me at work and pastoring. Help me. What do you see in my life that maybe I'm having a hard time seeing? And this pastoral intern looked at me and he said, "Travis, I'm concerned that if you don't do something about the speed at which you're pastoring, if you don't do something about the speed and the mode and the manner, the methods at which you're participating in God's mission, something's going to break one day and you're going to regret it." I said, "Well, thank you. It's not what I was expecting, but it's what I needed to hear. Thank you for being so honest with me." And that really sat heavy on my heart at the time. And I remember giving it a lot of thought. And I went to a men's retreat a week or so later. And the men's retreat speaker, he said, "We need to ask ourselves, what kind of man am I becoming? I want you to go back to your rooms and think about that question. What kind of man am I becoming?" And I remember sitting in my room and thinking about the intern's comment. I wrote down, "I think I'm becoming a busy man. I think I'm becoming a busy man." And I remember thinking to myself, I'm not sure busyness will lead me in the right direction. I'm not sure busyness is what God is asking of me. You see, busyness and hurry are the manners of addition. Availability is Jesus's table manner of alignment. And so I don't just want to look at Jesus's table manners. I hope we can align our table manners with the table manners of Jesus. And so when I think about this table manner of availability, I think about two contemporary applications might be this. Take time, take phones. Take time, take phones. You see, meals take time to cook. Meals take time to clean. We should let them take time to eat as well. There is an article that someone sent me from The Atlantic about a town in northern New York that seems to have avoided the intense polarization that the rest of our country is currently gripped by. That not the rest, just most of our country is currently gripped by and is really tearing our country apart. And they did some research. They had a group conduct research of different dynamics in different towns. And they found this to be one of the least polarized towns in all of the United States. And so the author of this article went there to figure out what was going on in this town and who was contributing to help this town have productive conversations and to listen well and to understand each other in the midst of our nation that's so quick to run to the polls and say, "You're over there and I'm over here and the twain shall never meet." And they interviewed a pastor. The man's name was Fred Gehry, who hosts a breakfast conversation each week to help people understand each other and where they're coming from. And this is what Amanda Ripley writes in this article as she interviews this pastor. "The first secret to making these conversations work is to meet face to face," Gehry says, "ideally over food. He starts cooking around 6 a.m. in the church kitchen, preparing the same spread every time, eggs with cheese and vegetables, bacon, potatoes, yogurt, and coffee. Once you're fed and you're with friends, you're a better person," he says. "The second secret is to talk for a long time. We talk about it long enough until we realize how much we don't know," he explains. "Once you've realized how much you don't know, the honest conversation comes out. The men's breakfast is slow and personal, the opposite of social media." Too often we're trying to have social media-like interactions with people. And Jesus is here at a table, taking his time, making himself available, reclining and lounging with Levi, other tax collectors around this table. Maybe we need to take some time around our meals and not just grab and go. Also, I think about taking phones. And when I think about taking phones, I'm almost embarrassed to bring this into a sermon, but sermons, they have to be, they have to meet us where we are in the 21st century, and this is where we are. By making you available to everyone, the smartphone has made us unavailable to those right in front of us. was having lunch with my mom this past week, and her phone was on the table. I was really looking forward to this conversation with my mom. Her phone was on the table, and it kept lighting up. And so finally I said, Mom, I said, would you mind if we just put that away? And she said, well, someone was texting me, and they were asking about this, and I was just trying to tell them that I'm having lunch, but I'll call them back in an hour. And this was sort of the reverse role in the relationship here. My mom has done much mentorship with me, but I thought maybe this is an opportunity I could speak into my mom's life. And I said, Mom, I am old enough to remember when it was good enough to say to someone, I'm sorry I missed your call. I wasn't home. Like, that was a perfectly acceptable thing. Anyone else remember that? Like, do you long for that day? You just said, hey, I'm really sorry I missed you. I wasn't physically in my house to grab that thing with a cord and stick it up to my face. And I worry, I'm old enough to remember that. But we're about to get to a generation that's not old enough to remember that. And so we have to be vigilant about this. We have to have this conversation. We have to help each other take our phones away from the table. My mom laughed and this is where I got the phrase, take phones. She said, here, just take it. You know what to do with it, just take it. And so then I showed her where the off button was and we turned it off. We turned it off together. It's not just my mom that struggles with this. I struggle with it too. I'll be sitting at the dinner table with my family. Everything's off, but someone will say something. I'll go, oh, I could Google that. I could find out when that movie is playing. I could look up that sports schedule. So sometimes I physically have to take my phone out of my pocket and put it in another room. Take time. Take phones. This Lenten season, may we hear Jesus' call to explore as a call to alignment before addition by aligning our table manners with the table manners of Jesus. And Jesus' first table manner is availability. He's available to Levi and his tax collector friends. Second, it's not just availability, the availability of Jesus, it's also the approachability of Jesus. The approachability of Jesus. Let me read verses 30 to 32. And the Pharisees and their scribes grumbled at Jesus, saying, why do you eat and drink with tax collectors and sinners? And Jesus answered them, those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners. What I find fascinating in this passage is the Pharisees are talking to who? Look at the passage in your Bible. Who are the Pharisees grumbling to? Who are they making their comments to? They're talking to Jesus' disciples. Yet it's Jesus that responds to the question. In other words, Jesus is saying, hey, you don't have to talk to them. I'm approachable. I'll answer your question. And look at how Jesus answers the question. He doesn't say, how dare you? I'm the Son of God. You do not question me. He kind of gives them a little illustration. He says, look, the healthy people in this world, they don't need a doctor. It's sick people that need a doctor. And the ultimate sickness is sin. So who am I going to hang out with? I'm going to hang out with people that are struggling with sin. That's what I'm here to do. And you think I'm making too much of this. What I also find fascinating here is that Jesus's question leads to more questions. Excuse Jesus's answer, his style of answer, leads to more questions from the Pharisee. So when we think about Jesus's approachability, I'll talk about it like this. He's approachable for questions and questionable people. That's who Jesus, what's this story is going to illustrate. Jesus is approachable for questions and questionable people. So Jesus answers their first question, and the paragraph break in our Bibles doesn't necessarily help us here. So look at verse 32 and 33. Those were just back to back. And listen to this. Jesus says, I have not come to call the righteous but sinners to repentance. And they said to him, the disciples of John fast often and offer prayers. And so do the disciples of the Pharisees. But yours eat and drink. In other words, the way that Jesus answered the question leads them to ask more questions. He doesn't shut down the conversation. They go, oh, well, that was kind of helpful. We've got another question, Jesus. And then he tells them this story about someone sewing a new piece of fabric on an old garment and what that does and what that looks like and someone pouring new wine into old wineskins. He tells them a parable. He tells them a story. Jesus doesn't say, I'm the Son of God. No more questions. He answers the question in such a way that invites more question. And I'll ask you, do you have a tell with your family or the people that you work with that says, hey, I'm not actually open to more questions? Do you have a phrase that you say, something that you do? Maybe it's raising your voice. Maybe you get red in the face. It goes, I'm closed for business. We're not talking about this anymore. I remember as a kid, when we think about tables, I've been thinking a lot about just my meals around tables. And if I just told you a story about my mom, I'll be an equal opportunity offender. I'll tell you a story about my dad. But my whole life, I was fodder for my dad's sermon illustrations. So I don't feel that bad about this, okay? That was my whole life growing up. So my dad, my sister and I knew very clearly when we were around the table, when we had crossed the line, because my dad would always say and do the same thing. Okay, he would pound the table, and I can still hear it in such a way that the forks and the knives like flew up off the table. It was like, boom, you clang, the clang of so, and then he would say, for gosh sakes. And when you got for gosh sakes, you knew it was over. Like, gosh sakes, oh, Ashley, he just said gosh sakes, shut it down. Whatever we just said was not good. Jesus doesn't do it like that. Instead, he tells them a parable. Remember last year, our Lenten series was on the parables of Jesus, kingdom stories, and this was our definition of a parable from a man named Tom Long, who was my preaching professor in seminary. He said, a parable is like a stick of dynamite wrapped in a story. So Jesus goes, psh, I got some dynamite for you, but I'm gonna wrap it in a story to keep the conversation going. I'm gonna wrap it in a story so we keep talking, so your questions will lead to more questions, so you know that I'm not just available to you, I'm approachable by you. And it's not just approachability of questions, he's approachable for questionable people. Don't forget how this story began. Jesus called a tax collector to be his disciple. In Luke, his name is Levi. In the Gospel of Matthew, his name is Matthew. Why Levi here and Matthew there? Because this man lived in two different worlds. He had his foot in two different camps. He might be what we would call today duplicitous, maybe even treacherous. He was, on one hand, a Jewish man. Hi, I'm Levi, here to be your servant at the synagogue. And on another hand, he was Matthew. I'm going to work with the Gentiles and be complicit in the foreign occupying power of Rome to oppress my own people. It was questionable people that Jesus was hanging out with that raised the questions that get asked. So if we want to align our table manners with the table manners of Jesus, let's ask this question. Who is absent from your table? Who's absent from your table? I admit, again, so much of this sermon is a struggle for me in my own life. As a Christian minister, I spend a lot of time with Christian people who have questions about how the church works, why this particular decision got made, help me understand this aspect about the Bible, theology, Jesus, whatever it might be. My table is constantly filled with people that share my beliefs. And so I would ask, who's absent from my table? Who's absent from your table? Are we being intentional to align our table manners with the table manners of Jesus and seek out some opportunities to eat with people that don't think like us, don't believe like us, don't act like us, don't vote like us? Because we need to align our table manners with the table manners of Jesus. We can't forget it was questionable people that caused the questions. So this Lenten season, may we hear Jesus' call to explore as a call to alignment before addition by aligning our table manners with the table manners of Jesus. One more thing on who's absent from your table. Make sure it's not you. So often, we are the ones that are absent from the table. We are the ones that are coming home so late that we're not eating dinner with our families. So when you think who's absent, Make sure you include yourself in that question. I'm doing that in my own life as well. And so my last question of application would be this. To what degree are my table manners aligned with Jesus's table manners? Where do you see your lack of availability and lack of approachability impacting how you're having table fellowship with people around you or without people around you? That same preacher, Fred Craddock, that I quote earlier, he asked this question, which really got my mind thinking. Am I at table with Jesus, tax collectors and sinners, or am I among the critics? Remember, there are two scenes going on. There's Jesus at the table with tax collectors, sinners, and the like. And then there are these people outside that are criticizing him and questioning him for this. Which table are you a part of? What if God had stayed outside and been a critic? What if God had said, it's too messy down there. Those people are too sinful. I can't become enfleshed and make my dwelling among them. It'd be too difficult. I might get caught up with some sinners down there. What if God had stayed outside and been a critic? Instead, God said, I will enter into it. I will be available to them so that they can, through faith, approach the throne that is in heaven through the shed blood of Jesus Christ. Instead of sitting outside of the table, Jesus set a table for us, which we'll participate in a moment, and said, I am available and I am approachable. Come, all who are weary and heavy laden, I will give you rest. So this week, I was running around the house looking for an envelope because this envelope had a check for hundreds of dollars in it from this past summer, my reimbursements for my vending duties at the community pool. And I couldn't find this envelope. And I go, I can't believe I've lost this check. And it was for hundreds of dollars. And I finally called out. I said, Nina, there's an envelope on my bedside table. Where is it? And she said, it was empty. I used it to write the do not use sign on the toilet. So I ran into the bathroom and I grabbed the envelope. I thought, is it empty? Is it empty? No, the check was still there. Thanks be to God. But I thought, this is how so many of us are looking at our moments around the table. Like they're empty envelopes to be discarded or crossed out or something scribbled on. I believe this Lenten season, Jesus is saying, these are not empty envelopes. These are opportunities filled with something precious and valuable if you will only align those moments with the mission that I've given you to be my witnesses in this world. So this Lenten season, may we hear Jesus' call to explore as a call to alignment before addition and align our table manners with the table manners of Jesus.